for a long time as a little kid, like probably upper elementary school, didn't know what it meant when somebody said that's what she said. But it was, again, like something where you were supposed to be like, ha ha, if you know, if somebody said that, like everybody knew you were supposed to laugh. But I think it was mostly
more,
it started
like sheep mentality, conformity. Yeah.
Well, and I think part of it was like
peer pressure. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I was the, like, I'm the oldest, so I didn't have older siblings that like influenced me. But I know I had a lot of kids in my class that by the time we were in upper elementary school, they had siblings that were like eighth graders and in high school and stuff. And so like my guess is they were hearing that stuff from them, and then yeah. they were passing it along to the people in our class. And then those of us that didn't have older siblings didn't have any idea what it meant. But it was something that it was like, well, the high schoolers think this is funny, so we have to laugh at it too, because we want to be cool and we want to be relevant as, you know, 9 year olds. So we
also
have to laugh at it.
Weird thing where people who are older than you, like when you're in elementary school and you think about like the people that were juniors and seniors when you were in elementary school, seem like way, way older. And then
oh, yeah.
There, it's like, wow.
Now looking at them, now when you do the opposite and look at people who are super young,
you're like,
and
I was
you
older
were
than that.
And like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
they look like babies. And you're like, no
or
way.
Or you watch somebody and you're like, I was so much more mature as
yeah,
a sixth
exactly.
grader. And then it's like, okay, realistically,
really?
I probably
yeah,
wasn't.
Put that in perspective.
Like, yeah, well, because I remember like even in as like a second grader thinking that like fourth graders felt super old. Like, you know, and you're like, oh, they're so much older and cooler. And then you get to fourth grade and you're like, I'm still a kid. And then like at that same time, you know, you're looking at kids in middle school and you're like, wow, they're so old and cool. Or like you're looking at high schoolers and you're like, they're like 50 years old. They're so mature. They're so wise. They're the like,
I never thought they were wise. I just
okay,
thought
maybe
they
not wise,
like they
but
were
like
adults.
You just felt like they were like so adult. And then you get to middle school and you still kind of feel that way about them. And then even as a freshman in high school, I remember thinking that like seniors were just so much
yeah.
older.
Yeah.
And then by the time you're a senior in high school, you're like, man, I'm still a kid. I'm not prepared for adult
it's
life.
Weird.
Like,
yeah.
And I look at seniors in high school now, and I'm like, you are babies. Like, you all look like you're 12.
Well, let's face it, you're what, 8 years older now than a senior? 17 and 18?
No, I'm
six or seven. Because,
yeah.
So, I mean, some seniors graduated when they were 17. Like, my mom graduated
okay.
when she was 17.
Yeah. I mean, depends on when your birthday falls. But yeah, I'm 6 years older. But still, like, even a couple years ago, I still felt like looking at high schoolers, I was like, oh, wow, they're all so little. Like, they all look like babies. They all act like children. Like, I don't remember being that immature.
Yeah. And it's going to keep happening. Like, people that we look at now, like, I don't know, like our parents, it seems like a long ways away, and they seem like they have a lot of years on us, and they do. But then, like, when we get there, we're not going to feel old.
No. And it was funny, just at dinner, they were talking about like the different weathers they were driving through, and they were laughing. They're talking about the weather. And then I was like, hold up, you're talking about them talking about the weather. And it's like, oh, but we're making fun of them. And it was just funny because I'm like, are we going to be having those conversations and be intrigued by it? Like, Nancy, oh my gosh, you went through a snowstorm? Wow, that's
okay,
tell me all about it.
Here's the thing that gets me the most. So, like, old people today, like, look down on, like, technology. Like, oh, that's, you know, stupid. Not all of them, but a lot of them
yeah.
never took it upon themselves to, like, become ingratiated with technology. They just kind of forgot about it. Like, they don't really care. And to us, like, it's a part of our everyday lives. Like,
yeah.
we thrive off of it. And I'm wondering, like, when we're like 90, what is the thing that is going to be?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm never going to
be. We're
going to
be like, things were something that was way cooler when the iPhone.
I do wonder if there
out.
Will be less of a generational gap moving forward, though, because in the past, like, every generation was so separate because you didn't have a way to like communicate your ideas
yeah,
and
there
like
was
your
a huge jump.
You didn't have a way to communicate the ideas and like the culture of your generation as easily with people that were older than you. Like, younger people saw it, like younger siblings and stuff, but like communicating it to people that were older and like more mature and everything, you didn't really have a way to do that. But now it's like, we're the generation that grew up with, like, we were kids when the internet first became like ubiquitous and everybody had it in their house and everybody owned a computer and it got used for in school for everything. And like, it was just like, it wasn't like nobody was like, oh, the internet, that's still something that you can only go to the library to use or whatever. Like, we were the first yeah. generation that really had that, like, everywhere. And cell phones, you know, we all had cell phones and all of that stuff. So because we've always had technology be such an influential part of our lives, and we're so used to like having communication with everybody about everything and being up on all of the stuff that's trending, even if we don't care about it, we still know that it's there. I wonder if the generational gap will close a little bit, like with people that are younger than us, like, you know, by the time we have kids, like if we won't feel as distant from them as people do sometimes with their kids now.
Some of the nostalgic things that we pertain to, like, I think we're just so ready for whatever is new. We forget things that were very relevant back then.
We definitely do the less of like, well, when I was little, like we're just like, oh, what's next? What's new? What's coming? What's...
But are we not going to be like that in the future, 70 years from now, you know?
I think we'll have our nostalgia, like, obviously, oh, I remember growing up with that as a kid, but I think we'll be more open to new
I feel like that, technology. Too. I think it might be more of things where it will be, like, not that we're out of touch with what's going on, but that just we'll have preferences of, like, well, we preferred it when, you know, this was the way we did things, or this was the primary source of something or whatever. Not that we won't understand how to use things or know what things are, but just that maybe we may be more inclined to just have preferences for like older ways of doing things. But because, like, I don't know, there just might be some things about like whatever we have now that what comes next, we may not like it as much because we're not, it just doesn't work for us as well. But that'll just be what the thing is. And so then we'll keep going with that. But then, you know, we might tell our children, like, oh, yeah, this is fine. You know, we know how to, we understand how to use whatever the, you know, whatever's going on with cell phones at that time. Be like, but, you know, I really liked having an iPhone 11 better or something. Like, I felt like that interface worked for me better or something, or it was a little more user friendly or something like that, that we might just have a preference, but we'll understand how to do things and what's going on still.
But is that how, adults think that they are right now too?
I kind of feel that way because when I was thinking as a kid, you know, it's like, how come adults get so tired and, you know, aren't energetic or don't like things kids do? And I'm thinking, oh, I'll never be that way. And, you know, I fulfill the prophecy of ending up just like my dad or just like my mom. So
I was just thinking about it today because we had people over and we were like hanging out upstairs talking. And I was like, I remember when and Reagan and the boys were downstairs playing Rock Band. I was like, I remember when I was the one downstairs, you know, playing ping pong or whatever, screwing around with my friends, hearing all the adults talking about
invested in conversation.
So boring. Why wouldn't you want to come like play a game, you know?
Yeah.
And now I'm going upstairs talking. It's like, it's so weird.
You know, I was thinking about that.
It's a slow change. It's not like a, it's not, you know,
and we're definitely still young enough that it's like, if they had been like, hey, will you guys come down and play with us, we probably would have and been like, yeah, we'll come down and play for a few songs, we'll play you in ping pong, or if they'd wanted to play like a card game or a board game or something,
well,
we would have
dad
done that.
Does that he's still
yeah my dad is good about that, but we definitely like all of us just made the decision to stay upstairs. It wasn't like a, oh, well, let's talk about it, oh, do we want to go downstairs, do we want to stay upstairs, like we all just kind of were like, yeah, we're gonna sit in on the conversation up here. And like, it was interesting talking about like sports injuries and like classic rock and stuff. Like, it wasn't a boring conversation, but definitely like when I was 14 or 15, I would have wanted to be downstairs. I'd be like, I'm not sitting in on the adult conversation. I don't care. Like, they're probably going to talk about something boring, like the weather or their trip over here or something.
Stevie Nicks.
Or somebody I'm not familiar with.
They're not
with.
Talking about Heart, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be like,
I agree. I like Heart better, though.
Heart's so much better than Starship.
Yeah. Listen to this bass introduction. I'm sorry, I had no idea what your dad was talking about like then. Like, yeah, it sounds cool, but I would have never guessed that if they turned it on the radio. I'm like, oh yeah, you hear that, he's following the lead guitarist and not the
he wasn't talking about the bassist, he was talking about the drummer.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Although I want to ask him what that YouTube channel was, because that actually sounds really interesting to hear somebody analyze things about
Beato. I think Beato.
I need to find that, because that sounds pretty interesting. Maybe not all of them, but definitely if it was about like either a band that you were interested in or a genre, or I don't know, it just sounds like it would be kind of cool. You probably went over some of that stuff because you took a history of rock and roll class. So,
went over some of what stuff?
Just like, I don't know, just things like that that he was talking about, that the drummer was following the lead guitarist instead of the bass player, which is the normal thing.
Well, that class was weird because it literally went from like the 40s or the 50s or something up to current in 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. So you didn't get a whole lot of in-depth.
Get like a week per decade.
You'd probably get a lot of bias too. or just, oh, this was kind of a big deal.
There were a couple of groups that I was like, how could you, like, why are these not
so included? Here's the,
like,
here's the Bee Gees.
Well, like, there's no mention of Jack White at all. And I feel like for, you know, 2000s rock.
Definitely for alternative rock, he was huge.
Because that was, that's, I feel like the 90s, I think the 90s, you go through a transition from rock and roll to hip hop from, like, late 80s, early 90s. And then you get that kind of, what is it? Grunge rock, alternative rock. You get punk rock, and you start
really
getting
did.
Into
like,
that. To
I'm
the
sure
2000s.
That Nate, I'm sure Nate could expand on this better than I can, but definitely you go from the 80s where there was you have 80s rock, but there's not. I mean, there's like arena rock, and then there's like regular rock, but there's not a lot of differentiation.
Well, and
there's
a lot of pop too in the 80s.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about just like rock. So I'm just talking about rock though. When you get to the 90s, you get grunge.
Well,
and there starts to be
also
some alternative rock. And then by the time you get to the early 2000s, there's a significant array of, like, types of rock groups.
But
punk rock, hard rock.
Grunge pulled from metal. There was a lot of metal in the 80s.
Yeah.
Metal basically started in the 80s.
Yeah.
That's really what kind of...
Yeah. It just seems like definitely by the time you get to the early 2000s, like the first, you know, 6 or 7 years there of the aughts, that... there was a very wide variety of rock groups. There, and now it doesn't seem there's as many, because some of those groups or some of those subgenres. Some of those subgenres really have died down a lot.
I don't
like,
even know what you'd call our generation of music throughout the 10s and the 20s now. You know, you've gone through this stage of rap and hip hop. But you've kind of flatlined now.
I feel
what
like the,
is it?
I feel
What's
like
the new
the,
thing? Or
the,
is it just still going?
That's a good point. Because you can look at the 70s and be like, okay, in the 70s, there was like, there's easy listening, and there was rock, and there's disco. And like, when you hear it, you know it's 70s. The 80s, when you hear it, you know it's 80s.
Yeah, and kind of 90s, the same with the 60s, too.
Even the early 2000s, you can pinpoint an early, like something pre-2010 is usually pretty easy to pinpoint. You can be like, that's kind of an old song.
Well, yeah,
and
you
I
could identify it, like you get kind of, you know, smooth jazz 40s, and then you have the introduction to faster swinging music in 1950s and the introduction of rock and roll, and then you kind of get the beatnik movement and, you know, kind of hippie music throughout the 60s and, you know, the feel good. And you can pinpoint, and you were saying like, oh, if you turned on a song, you could easily identify what genre that is. I don't think you can really throughout the later 2000s.
I think, well, I mean, we can because we've grown up with it, and we know that they're groups, but they're definitely like, they lack distinction. There's nothing
well,
that
say
you can,
have like
there's
a
no
blind
specific
listen, and it's, you know, you're just listening to it, you don't know who any of the bands are, and you're just listening to the type of music, you know, can you pinpoint which decade
I think we could still. What I'm saying is, like, in the future, like, you know, our kids who didn't grow up listening to this stuff, like, and knowing these bands, like, knowing that, you know, oh yeah, you know, Billie Eilish was, you know, big in 2019 and 2020, like somebody that didn't grow up with it. So
okay,
hearing it later, would they be able to pinpoint the decade, or would they just know, like,
but it's not just the artist, it's the style of music.
That's what I mean,
that's
though.
It's getting murky.
That's what I mean.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, because that's what you're saying. Like, if you hear an 80s song, you can tell like 99% of the time that it is an 80s song.
I'm sorry, even with like 80s country music, you can tell it's an older country music. But what I'm saying is, like, there's a specific sound, there's a specific style that these artists go for, and with auto-tune and technology, there's no real way you can identify it either based on the, you know, talent.
Yeah, and that's
of the
what I'm saying is, like, you know,
either.
Our kids someday are they going to be, like, they'll hear it, and I feel like it might be something where they can come around and be like, well, I know it's between, like, it's sometime in the 2000s, but, like, would they be able to
pinpoint it?
Because it's like, you know, even listening to 80s stuff, with most 80s music, you can even kind of tell what time during the 80s it came out of. Like, is this early 80s? Is this late 80s? Like, you can tell. And because culturally, everybody was doing kind of similar, like, within their genre was kind of doing similar stuff. And so as it changed over the course of the decade, you can tell, and there were very specific, like, key instruments or sounds that people used. But then, yeah, it's like our music, there's not really any defining characteristics other than that it isn't really definable.
It's crap.
And it's, yeah, a lot of it's not that good either. Like,
sorry to the listeners.
There aren't that many good, I don't know, music. There just aren't that many good bands anymore that are like really true. Like, and the ones that are still good are ones that started like 15 years ago.
If you think about it, there are very, very few current bands that I actually want to go see concerts.
Well, a lot of it's like SoundCloud artists that are trying to make it as individual rappers. I mean, my friend Cruz tried making it out, and he has like 5 songs that are on SoundCloud, and he's got a very small, you know, follower base.
Well, that's part of the problem.
It's too easy.
It's why this podcast isn't popular. It's why people like that aren't popular, because everyone can do it. Yeah. Everyone can do it. And if you're not standing out, you're just getting lost.
I like how you just roasted yourself. Just like, hey, I'm crap.
No one will know.
Yeah, exactly. Who's listening?
At least on the bright side, like, podcasts are different to an extent, because it's not so much of like people trying to pretend they have talent. Like, podcasts are really people just talking about things. So you have a better chance of finding people that appeals to.
People that do have talent usually excel.
Yes, but some of it
find the niche and they're good.
Yeah, but you still people still have to find you. Like, it may be a little bit of luck,
or yeah,
a lot of money. But it kind of has to go.
How everything works. Either you have luck or money.
That's life. But you and still, the rest, if you have neither,
only those two.
You're screwed if you don't have either. So
okay, but what I'm saying is, like, even if you find a niche that you're like, oh, nobody else is doing this, other people may not know that that's a niche that they want yet. Until they find you. But then the complication is like, well, how do you get found if nobody really knows about it yet? And if nobody knows about it yet, how do you have the money for it? And if you don't personally, like, a lot of podcasters get their money from advertisements, and it's like, if you don't have a good base though of followers, people who would sponsor ads on you aren't gonna find you. So like, it's a weird like balance of like, where do you, like, unless you have a lot of money to like self-advertise like places, you know, or like,
yeah. We have a free advertisement just waiting for us. We just have to do a Star Wars film.
That is true. That is true. So yeah, it is just kind of a weird balance. But with music, it's much, much harder, because it's all of these people that really don't have, like, there's no interest, because you're not talking about a subject. You're just making music. And so if you're not very good, people aren't going to listen to it. And so then it's like, it's even harder, I think, than with a podcast, because I'm way less likely. Like, I will check out somebody's, like, if somebody was like, hey, I have a podcast I'm trying to start out, like, check it out, I would be much more inclined to do that. If somebody's like, I have a song on SoundCloud, or check out my SoundCloud, I'm like, I'm not checking that out.
There's actually a very large base of like individual artists that are trying to make it big. You know, I was talking about the
Ice
SoundCloud.
Ice JJ Fish.
Yes. 6969696969. But they all meet at this abandoned warehouse, and they're all on SoundCloud, and they're all trying to make their own music.
They did a major collab.
Like, they do this weird thing where a bunch of individual artists will just go to this abandoned warehouse, sell tickets, and a bunch of people go in Reno. It's really weird, and they'll have like
that's
a dozen
like a cool
artists.
Underground
no,
scene
no, no,
though.
No, yeah. No, no. This is like you're hanging out with your friends and like, let's go make fun of these people.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
might
Get
be
a couple
it could
packs.
It could
well,
be
I've
it could
never
be an underground
seen
music
it, but
scene
I've
too,
heard
though.
So many people say, hey, like, you going to the warehouse this
Dude,
weekend
I would go to that.
I would go because either it's going to be hilarious to make fun of people, or there's going to be
find
some
good music.
Or that's a new thing that you will get in kind of on the ground floor of people that may never become huge, but that genuinely make good
music
and just don't
people,
have the resources to.
I've heard like it's really big and people enjoy it, but
we should go next time we're in Reno.
No, it's sketchy.
Oh.
So?
It's like,
how sketchy though?
People bring needles and stab each other, you know, giving you AIDS. Hey, how you doing, pal? And that's how sketchy it is. It's
just
not a good place.
Okay, maybe not.
All right, social distancing, guys. I need a 6-foot radius from everyone. Okay.
Okay.
Only 6-foot needles.
Yeah. But yeah, but like going back to the music thing, like it definitely it really decreases the quality of like.
Yeah,
it, well, it's
so
a combination
much.
Of things. It's one that it's too easy, and then two, what we were talking about like while the Stearns were here is that it has become less about trying to promote good music and more about promoting personalities and like a culture. And if you have the right face or body type
well,
or like personality for it, then they will auto-tune you to the point where you sound like you can do music.
Well, you were saying yesterday that you thought that heavier metal music was actually more meaningful than some of the Christian music that's produced now, because Christian music is so vague and it's always the same thing. And even some of the message, just, it's not heartfelt or genuine, but you're looking at the music that's from heavy metal.
Oh, bands, I'm not even talking about the lyrics. That... I'm just talking about straight music ability. Like, oh. There's so many bands that just don't really have a lot of musical ability. They're just auto-tuned and they play such simple music.
Well, yeah,
that
and that's
sounds like they have a better
Bo
idea of
Burnham's
what they're doing.
Repeat stuff, you know, it's satire and he's poking at that, you know, modern day music artists, because it's always the same song, just played in the same three chords, and they'll just run it over and over and over again, and that's all you hear on radio stations too. Like, you hear the four same songs repeated over and over throughout the whole day, and that's how they become hit classics. But you don't see boy bands lasting forever, like having the influence of Led Zeppelin, you know.
Well, Led Zeppelin is the OG boy band. I don't know about that statement,
but they a boy band like One Direction will never have the same amount of influence as a band like
Led
Zeppelin.
Well, no, because they didn't do anything new.
Van Halen or Def Leppard.
They didn't do anything new. They didn't do anything exciting. They didn't. There's nothing groundbreaking about their music. It's bland and it's predictable. Like, they are not doing anything with music. Whereas like Led Zeppelin, as Nate could tell you from his history in rock and roll class, I'm sure.
Or just from the fact that I
listened to
it. Or just,
he
yeah. But I'm saying, you know, like, I'm sure you guys talked about it. It's like, Led Zeppelin is somebody that, like, every good rock artist after them could say some kind of, like, they influenced me. Either they inspired me to become a musician or to start a band, or that they influenced the way I do
music.
Well, yeah,
music. That's, like, as I said, like, Van Halen, you know, Def Leppard. They were influenced by Led Zeppelin
everyone
and what they
was.
Were doing. Everyone in the
like
80s
Frank
was probably...
Yeah, Frank Sinatra
yeah.
got all of his ideas from Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, exactly. Billy Joel.
Yeah.
The Beatles. All Led Zeppelin.
Dude, the Beatles were such, like... They
suck compared to anyone else.
They were just bandwagoning.
Yeah, they really were. They did nothing new.
Yeah.
Same with Elvis. He just...
Yeah.
Actually, he did. He copied.
He copied, but he had his own unique style that made him different from other artists.
Well, actually,
and Sinatra hated Elvis too.
Actually, really, who Elvis copied was all the blues, like all the because
he grew up in
black neighborhood, and he was the one, like the only white guy that they respected around there because he could sing.
Well, and he was a nice boy too, like in the historical aspect of like, okay, that's a he's a
nice
boy.
Nice
boy. No, but what he would do is he would specifically choose. No, his last name's Presley.
What?
Well, there is an Elvis Costello too.
What are you talking about?
But I'm talking about like musical influence. He didn't care about like racial segregation or anything. Like, I'm talking, his personality really helped him out, because he would look for black singers specifically because he thought they were more talented, they could hit higher ranges for vocals, and he wanted black singers and black artists within his band or orchestra performing because it just sounded better. I mean, it really helped him out when he was making his gospel albums, just because it sounds much more passionate and way better than having...
Did you see the Green Book?
No, what's that
interesting.
On?
It's about a black guy that comes over. I think he comes over from, I don't remember where. But he's really, really rich, and he's really good. He has like a doctorate and something, and he's really good at playing the piano. He's a really good piano player. And this is in the 60s, I think. So right around that
Civil rights movement.
Yeah. Hmm. And he has like a bunch of concerts in the Deep South. And so it's about him and his kind of racist bodyguard that go through this whole, or driver slash bodyguard that go
who's
through
in
this
that
whole,
this sounds familiar.
Not Don Cheadle, it's another guy that looks like Don Cheadle. Ollie something, he has a kind of a long name, and then Viggo Mortensen plays the driver. It's pretty good.
Well,
you
watch it with Viggo Mortensen. He's a great actor.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He's only in a few films. I haven't seen him in a lot. Yeah.
He's in a lot of independent films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine
like,
that.
Lord of the Rings
is his biggest.
But...
I remember him in Hidalgo, and I really like that
Hidalgo
movie.
Was good.
Yeah.
I highly rate Captain Fantastic. It's another independent film. It's pretty good. It's pretty
good. Is that the one?
He hangs dong. Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't hang dong.
Females. Speaking of hanging dong, there's a little bit of a dong hang in this movie.
That's what I was going to get to. I was going to say, this movie does not hang dong too much, right? It sucks.
A lot of full moons, though.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Big fat Bruce Willis moons.
Yeah.
This movie.
Gross. Get
if you scrubbed. If you like ass Ew. Cheeks, watch this movie because it smacks.
I do not want to hear you talk about Bruce Willis that way.
Hey, I wasn't talking about Bruce Willis. I was talking about the monkeys. Which there are no monkeys.
There
Did
no
you
monkeys.
Notice?
And that's not
that's
true.
That's a good teaser.
No, song. There's only there's only the
I like
picture
you got quiet, like the music is gonna fall.
Yeah. Wait. No, I was trying to off the record, but there really aren't any monkeys throughout. It shows giraffes, it shows elephants,
it does
tigers,
show monkeys.
Bears. I didn't remember seeing any
it shows monkeys.
Monkeys. I saw the painting of the.
It shows
monkeys
in the zoo.
In the zoo? Okay, I guess I didn't see that.
It's either in the zoo or in the lab. I don't know. It showed monkeys in cages at some point. It was briefly, but it did show monkeys.
Okay.
All right, so remember. The theme song is now over.
The theme song.
The theme song.
It's a theme song. That's what Big Problem Little China.
Big Trouble
Big
Little
Trouble,
China.
Big Trouble.
Oh boy, there's boy. That is a that's one for another day. That's one for another day. That is a good film. We would all give it
we'll
a 10 out of 10 and recommend it.
10 out of 10 would recommend.
Would recommend. Yeah. Tell your friends.
It's a masterpiece.
Okay. So anyway, sadly that's not the movie we're here to discuss today, even though we'd all rather be talking about that because
we're here to discuss 12 Monkeys from 1995 starring Bruce Willis
old as you.
And Brad Pitt pre Fight Club. Brad Pitt.
Shocking
directed
he
by
made
Terry
it
Gilliam.
Into Fight Club after this.
Terry Gilliam is a director who has done a lot of Monty Python.
Yeah.
And some other weird stuff.
Yeah. Mostly Monty Python.
I think that's his most notable work that the director's done.
Anybody who worked on Monty Python, that was their most notable
work. After that, they probably didn't get much.
Didn't the guy, I think one of the main, I don't know Monty Python that well, but one of the main guys just died recently, I think.
Oh.
Not that long ago.
Oh.
It's kind of sad. Comedically, they were geniuses.
Yeah.
They really were.
Really good.
But production-wise of a film?
Well, I mean...
That was the point. They weren't supposed to be high budget.
They were basically like extended sketches.
Which is weird because this movie seems like it should have been high budget but has very low quality.
Okay. We'll get into that in a minute. Karina, go ahead and do a rundown for us.
All right. So the synopsis is... the movie takes place in like 2035 or something.
I don't know if does it ever say...
2085, I don't know. Anyway, in the future, but not super far into the future.
Decent future.
Like, the near future. And basically, all of what's left of human civilization appears to live underground, and there was a plague that wiped out, like, 90% of the population, and so this group of scientists/researchers and doctors, I don't really know what they are trying to send people using a time machine back to the 90s right before the plague is released on the planet to figure out where it comes from so they can trace like the origin strain so that they can
study it.
They can study it, create an anecdote.
They're not trying to, that's the interesting
they
want to
make a
this.
Vaccine. They're not trying to reverse what happened
they,
in the past.
Basically, they're sending people back to pinpoint where it starts so that then they can, once they know the exact point in time, they can send a scientist and a doctor and everything back to study it. But yeah, they're not trying to stop the spread of it. They just want to study it so they can create an anecdote or a vaccine or something for it. So
the past 1995.
Yeah. So that's the premise of why Bruce Willis is sent there. And then he has to get sent back a couple times. He's struggling with finding out exactly what's going on. He meets Brad Pitt, who in a psych ward, and I can't remember the actress's name.
Madeline Stowe, but don't quote me on that.
Okay, Nate's going to look it up real fast. And then an actress who is a, she's a psychiatrist, and she ends up working with him as well as they try to track down the origin of this. And for them, it becomes about stopping the actual spread of it, even though that wasn't the mission he was sent there to complete. So that's roughly the synopsis.
Madeline Stowe.
Okay.
And the only other thing really that she's been in worth noting would be Last of the Mohicans and
That was a popular film of the 90s.
Those are both good Mel movies, Gibson? But
Mel Gibson. Nothing else I'm seeing here is worth noting.
Yeah.
And if you take offense to that because you like The Christmas Hope from 2009, go fuck yourself.
And there's no hope for Nate.
You heard it here first, folks.
So this is our second movie starring a psych ward.
True.
Our first movie, our Brad Pitt-a-thon.
We're having a Brad Pitt-a-thon?
Well, whenever we do another Brad Pitt movie, it'll just be the second part of our Brad Pitt-a-thon.
Karina would have rather seen his ass than Bruce Willis's.
That is true. I'm not going to deny
that. I would have sold tickets.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you rather
even
see,
me?
Would you
rather
see,
like,
picturing,
oh, yeah.
I'm just picturing,
you're picturing
Brad
his
Pitt
ass.
I mean, yeah, or Brad Pitt and Troy. Like, you see some. I think
pretty
you see some
yeah.
some ass.
You
in
see
there.
Some. You see some cheeks.
Yeah, you see some cheeks in
oh,
Troy.
Oh yeah, there's a little raunchy scene in that.
There's
that gets skipped when you watch it in school.
Oh, you watch that in school?
No, not Beowulf. Yeah, it is.
Well, there's
yeah.
There's two instances where they're laying in bed, like the opening scene where the boy. Little messenger boy runs to go get him to fight the
there's that
big guy
of the later
the,
scene
he had like a threesome they're hinting at it there's multiple
anyway
women.
The point is I would rather be looking at naked Brad Pitt than naked Bruce Willis.
Pretty much anyone could say that.
Well, his ass looks like his head, so
although not at the end of the movie.
Thank
not the
god
best part of this movie.
I'm glad that didn't change. Got flowing locks down there too.
Honestly, I think the entire first hour and 45 minutes of this movie was just a build up so that we could see Bruce Willis. Just an excuse to get Bruce Willis into
that awful 70s cop getup.
Pedo stash.
He doesn't even look like that. He looks like a bad 70s cop TV show thing.
No.
Like, that's what it is, the white pants and that awful mustache and the hair.
He could definitely be in Serpico. Yeah.
It was not good. Not easy on the eyes at any point in that movie.
Bruce Willis already kind of isn't easy.
No, Bruce Willis is not attractive in.
Was he a heartthrob at one point?
I don't think so.
I think he was just because of Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was an action star, not a heartthrob.
Brad
Pitt
was
a heartthrob.
Okay, and then this is confusing because Kevin Costner was also a heartthrob at one point.
Yeah. It's weird to think that he was.
I'm just saying, I don't think Bruce Willis ever was. Bruce Willis is not attractive.
I think he was more just really.
And I don't ever think he did any movies that would make him a heartthrob. He was doing like
that's
this.
What I'm saying.
And
I think
like,
he was a big action star.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
Heartthrob.
Like Die Hard, stuff like that, where you like, that's not the kind of stuff where people like. That not a lot of women are going to see those movies. Like, that's guys going to see those movies. They're, So, anyway, where to start with this one?
Where to start? I don't think I hate it as much as you guys do. It seems like you guys really hate this with a fiery passion.
I don't
passion.
Hate it. I just think it seems like a joke.
Yeah, it seems like because we laughed. I enjoyed
watching
some parts. It's not intentional, though.
Yeah,
I mean, I was laughing
because
at it.
Because it's not a
it.
Comedy.
Not even.
At all. It's supposed to be a very serious
film. Well, that's the weird thing. Tonally, this movie's kind of weird because it feels like it should be serious, but then other times... It feels comedic.
Okay,
stupid.
So I looked that up when right after we watched the movie. I was looking that up because I was like, "What is wrong with this movie?" Because like the it's not so bad when he's in the 90s, but when he's supposed to be in the past, when he's supposed to be in the future in the underground civilization, all of the you don't realize it at the beginning at first, but then once he starts meeting the scientists, it gets really weird really fast with like
and
weird
even the
tech.
Camera angles.
Yeah,
are,
camera
make
angles
it have a very odd feeling.
Yeah, the camera angles and just this kind of weird like it feels like they used spare parts to build everything, and it's like fake scientific equipment looking.
Okay. So I was thinking about that, but as I was thinking about that, like all the tech stuff in the present, future, whatever of this movie. It looks weird. It looks kind of janky, but that's kind of like how the stuff in The Matrix looked, too. Like, yeah, I think that's just kind of how they depicted the future back in the 90s. Like,
no, okay, but I looked it up. So that's what I'm saying is I looked it up because I wasn't sure. I was like, is this intentional? Like, or is this just people like had a really bad idea of how to do futuristic stuff, which doesn't seem right because they were also doing things for like Star Trek and stuff. And that was very clean looking. And even Star Wars was really well done for futuristic stuff, like by 70s standards. So
well,
I looked.
That's actually in the past, but I won't.
But what I'm saying is, it's supposed to be like space though. Like it's supposed to be very different. Anyway, so I looked it up. And the director had said that the point of the way that they did it was that the future was supposed to seem very bleak. And that's interesting because it does kind of have that feel. However, the way they chose to depict it, the overall feel that you get, like the vibe it gives off, the tone of all of the stuff that happens in the future, is it feels campy.
Yeah, and they give, you got a certificate as a time traveler.
And they're like singing to him. And
that's what they're trying to do. Like, it's so cringy, you just want to like kill yourself. Like,
it really is.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a very bleak. Like, can you imagine living in that?
But
because the bleak thing they're achieving, where like everyone's in cages and they get become volunteers and it's very like dystopian forced in that way. The other part of it is how like it's almost. Parts of it are kind of goofy, like out
that's
of the
what
Dr.
I'm saying.
Seuss type of
that's what thing. I'm saying. So if they had like original, like when the movie starts, that's what I'm saying. You don't realize it at first because he's in a cage and he's a prisoner. Like that does genuinely feel bleak and sort of believable. But then you start to get like the guards are wearing super weird outfits. And one guy has like weird like Arnold Schwarzenegger hair, but it's like bleached and he's like got weird shades and like looks really bizarre.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, he's one. Yeah, kind of like a Billy Idol Arnold Schwarzenegger crossover. Like
just.
And he's just cringy and like kind of greasy looking, and you're just like, oh. So
kind
there's
of a
like.
Sleazier Billy Idol.
Yeah. So like you've got like.
Billy Idol's sleazy, but in like a sexy kind of way.
Yeah, this guy was sleazy in like a creepy.
He's more like Billy Idol, but like now Billy Idol, not.
I guess. Anyway, yeah.
Keep
so the
my
point
children
being.
Away from him, kind of Billy
so
Idol.
So the point being.
Hey, little sister, cool what have you cool. done? Get away.
Okay. So the point being that like you've got weird costumes, and then all of the doctors and scientists have like weird, like they don't seem
real. Well, this
real.
Guy also directed The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Yeah. See, honestly, these people felt like they fit better into that. And then you have all the weird tech that like the little floating ball that has all the screens on it that are zooming in on weird things. And like he's on a chair like lifted way up in the sky to talk to them, even though he could have just stood in front of their desk to talk to them. And instead they have him floating at the other end of the room in this chair and the ball with all the screens for him to look at them instead of. It's just. And everything looks like it's built out of rusted pipes, but
that's the bleakness.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, but it's not done in a way that feels bleak. It's done in a way that feels like laughable is how it feels. Like I was telling Elise that it felt like it should have come out of like a series of unfortunate events, like that part of it did. Like it was just like these like pseudo scientists that are supposed to be kind of this vague, menacing authority, but you don't really fear them or take them seriously, and that's how they felt. But the movie isn't supposed to have that tone. The movie's supposed to be serious, but it doesn't.
We assume
based on what I read from the director talking about it, it seemed like he was taking it seriously and that he didn't want it to be like comedic in any way.
I would be very curious
but
to know how this movie was accepted back in 95, like when it came out.
I don't know,
you know? Because that's, you know, that's another thing is that a lot of this stuff is the weird camera angles and all that is part of it being a 90s movie. I mean, if you watch other movies from the 90s, not necessarily, not comedies so much, but definitely action movies from the 90s, like they loved their weird camera angles and all that, like just distorted stuff. It was popular.
Yeah, I think what they call that is a Dutch angle where it slowly will start shifting. And what it'll do is it's like the camera's tilted. And they'll start zooming in on you, so it's like I'm tilting my head and looking right at you to give this sense
and
of
for
like
some reason that was enjoyable and popular.
Yeah, it's like a distorted kind of scene. You know that something eerie is going on, like something's not right,
but
and that's what they're trying to create. Yeah,
but definitely that's the kind of thing like you have to use that correctly and sparingly if you want
saying.
It to be effective. And it's
yeah,
all
and it's
over
the
this
whole
movie.
It was popular to do that.
Like, yeah, but that's just lazy filmmaking if you're like, we're gonna take this one shot that should be unique and used in a very particular way and we're just gonna film the whole movie like that. Like, really? Okay.
Yeah, because it feels like the entire movie you're kind of spinning, just because each one goes, you know, tilting to the right, tilting to the left, spinning around Bruce Willis. You know, I get what they're trying to create, but when that's the entire
when Bruce Willis stripped,
like, hot flash.
My eyes were running. Yeah. I was like, ah, my eyes.
Drop those trousers. Now pick them back up. No one wants to see.
Yeah, there's just so many weird camera angles, and that just adds to not being able to take it seriously. Like, it already feels weird, and then the camera angles just add to that. It's like, I understand you want to use unusual camera angles sometimes to capture a very specific feel, but you want to do that in the right way at the right time. And if you are, you know, if half your film is wonky camera angles or like things that are off kilter or that are off center or that are spinning or twisting or zooming in and out or whatever, like, it feels like, it just feels like a joke at that point. It doesn't feel like it was made by serious filmmakers, which I apologize to them if they were trying to make a serious film and they just were like, hey, this is popular. But it doesn't wear well.
No. I think they're just a victim of the time.
Yeah. Possibly.
Just
smack dab in the middle of the 90s, you know.
Listen, parts of me... See, like, watching all the Buffy that I've watched, you know, right at the kind of the tail end of the 90s and it's into the 2000s, like, part of me, like, I look at the style, like, the clothing is just, for the guys and the girls, was just terrible. The girls wasn't as bad. The guys was definitely worse than the 90s. Bad. But, like, part of me wants to be in high school in the 90s, just to, like, be a part of that. Like, it would be fun. It would be fun to, like, have the big baggy jeans and you have your big, style like, button-up shirt that's way too big and you just... It'd be kind
of
cool.
I'm just thinking of a style that never really goes out of style is, you know, classic jeans and a t-shirt. You could go through, I mean, that was very 50s. You could wear it in the 60s. It's acceptable. And it stays throughout. You could even go through the 90s, like when everyone's wearing this new fad of, you know, baggy pants, these super big tie-dye shirts.
They just look at you with, like, fitting jeans and be like, I still stuck in the 80s.
If you just wear a nice pair of jeans and a t-shirt, and that could go for either sex... It's a clean look,
definitely. And the 90s definitely, I mean, I guess every decade I think has tried out some weird stylistic stuff. Mm-hmm. The 90s are just as guilty of that as everybody else, although there's not as much bad fashion in this movie because it's not about high schoolers, it's about adults. And, you know, Bruce Willis spends most of it either in like psych ward pajama type clothes or in just kind of coveralls that he is wearing.
Well, here's the
and
thing.
Then the I only think... other real adult in the movie that's in it for any significant part is the psychiatrist, so she's dressed professionally
I think in the 90s there was one thing that was really that affected everyone, which was baggy shirts. Everyone had baggy shirts. Even your nice dress shirts were baggy. They just were.
Yeah.
You know, the sleeves and it was all baggy.
Yeah, it was loose.
If you watch Friends, everyone has baggy.
Yeah, and basically like that the came really out of the 80s. Stuff, they just took the shoulder pads
the
out.
The really baggy stuff was like in high school. I think that was more of a high school thing, like a skater thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Everyone had baggy to some extent.
Yeah. The people in this film are definitely not victims of bad fashion in the way that like people in Buffy are.
No, and obviously they don't want you to focus. I mean, I think where you get costume design that's faulty is where they're in the future, and the clothing that they wear is very weird. I mean, the uniforms that the soldiers wear, the lab coats that they wear, even like they have all their citizens wearing pretty much prison guard clothes that are not prison guard, prisoner clothes. So
yeah, there's definitely an element of you can tell that they're trying to make it bleak, but with like the guards that kind of fall short of that, and it feels dystopian, but it feels again dystopian in kind of a comical way when you're like, why does this guy look like, you know, the love child of Schwarzenegger and Billy Idol? Like,
so maybe
it's not really working.
This movie was definitely supposed to be serious to a certain extent, but at the same time you kind of have to look at it, and the stuff that Terry Gilliam has directed, a lot of it has been kind of silly stuff, and so maybe
it was just hard to break.
Maybe he doesn't know how to make a serious film.
Well, it was might have been hard to break away from that. I mean,
yeah, maybe he couldn't make a truly 100% serious film. You know,
there are aspects of comedy
stuff that gets.
Yeah, definitely.
So, what are redeemable things about it?
Brad Pitt.
Do you guys think?
Just kidding.
Well, I think the actors do well on what they're trying to portray. It's just hard to capture everything because of the film work behind it. Other casting, because we were saying, how on earth did Brad Pitt have a career after this. But if you're going to play someone who's schizophrenic or psycho, I think he does a very convincing job.
He does do a good job. I think it has more to do with the, like, I agree. Like, obviously Bruce Willis is, you know, a good actor. So is Brad Pitt. The girl, I forgot her name was.
It was Madeline Stowe.
Madeline. So, Madeline Stowe, is that what you said? So, yeah. Madeline Stowe, I mean, she was fine in this movie. Obviously, she didn't have a, you know, a huge career or anything. But they're definitely, like, fine in their own right. However, I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that the writing of this movie is so poor that it's surprising to me that, especially that Brad Pitt, because this was really early on, he was like really young in this movie, that he went on to still be in other, like, much more serious and well done movies like Fight Club.
I think that's what makes me think that this movie was probably pretty popular when it came out.
Maybe. I mean, part of me wonders if it was only popular because of the people in it. They were like, well, it's Bruce Willis and Brad Pitt. Like, yeah, we'll go see it. Because
Brad Pitt was definitely a heartthrob when
he was. He was at this rising. Time. Like, I think he had been in some other things.
Was he yet, or was it not till Fight Club?
Hang on, well, I'll look it up. I thought he had done some stuff earlier than this.
I'm pretty sure he was married to Jennifer Aniston, too. So, publicity.
Yeah,
he was, you know, a household name for sure in the 90s, so...
I don't know if you consider him a heartthrob at this point, though.
Yeah. It still might be early in his career.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, let me see. I'm going to... You guys need to talk.
Because when
did
Troy come out? Did that
Troy's from, like, 2000...
No, I'm asking because he was 40 when he did that movie. So if this is 95, he might actually be...
Brad Pitt's probably 50. He's probably 50.
I think he's a little older than that right now. Might be closer to 60.
He's 56. Oh, and he still looks real good.
Of
course he does.
Yeah, he's Brad Pitt.
Okay, his first, like, starring role is 1988. He's in some movie called The Dark Side of the Sun. And then more TV stuff.
That's edgy.
Dark Side of the Sun.
He's in a lot more TV stuff from there on. Another movie in 89 called Cutting Class. Thelma and Louise, Johnny Suede, Cool World, Tales from
Thelma
the Crypt.
Thelma and Louise would have probably
River
got
runs
him
through
a
it.
Lot.
Joe Black, isn't that? That was in the 90s, wasn't it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Might have been post. Might have been after 12
Contact, years. California, True Romance, The Favor, Interview with a Vampire, where he was in it with Tom Cruise.
That was
the turning point in his career, is what the Wikipedia page was saying. Legends of the Fall, Seven...
Seven was a big...
Seven was the same year as 12 Monkeys. So he'd had some good ones under his belt. So maybe he just had enough behind him already that people were like, it's a Brad Pitt movie, I'll go see it. And he still had a career after that.
Well, it was a Bruce Willis movie that had Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I don't know. Brad Pitt had starred in like 8 or 9 movies at this point.
Yeah, but it was a Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah, it's still Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
It's because Bruce Willis is the main character.
Brad yeah, but
Pitt
I'm
is a side character.
But I'm saying is like... It is still, there might have been a lot of people that went to see it because he was also
in it. And his name is on the cover of 12 Monkeys. I'm not saying he wasn't a big name.
Yeah.
So
Joe Black was 98.
98.
Yeah, and then he has, another movie in 99.
Fight Club was 99.
Fight Club's 99. He's also in Being John Malkovich in 99.
What?
It's what it's called, Being John Malkovich.
I feel like I need to watch that.
Hmm.
I like my boy Malkovich.
And then Snatch in 2000.
Dude,
and then we get
Snatch. I haven't seen all of it.
And then...
Because, dude, Brad Pitt plays such a good character in that movie. He plays this Irish guy, and you cannot hear... Like, you could watch that entire movie, and you might understand 20% of the words he says. Like, because of his accent and the way he talks.
Oh, my god!
You can't understand most of what he says in that movie.
Troy was 2004, you were asking.
Okay.
Which was the same year as Ocean's 12.
So, yeah.
And the year before Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
So, yeah, definitely the acting.
Yeah.
Is a plus in this, for sure.
Yeah, not terrible, not cringeworthy, really. Storyline and
the
way... The
writing is not good, though.
A lot of the visuals make it very, very comical as well, so...
I disagree. I think it's well written.
You do?
Why do you think it's well written?
I think it's a good plot. It's a little convoluted.
I can see, like, the dystopian...
I'm not a fan of flashbacks, but...
Okay, here's what I would say. I would say the concept is good, the writing, the execution is poor.
Why?
Because, A, like you said, it's a little convoluted. Like, it's not clear, and they
it could have been more easily cleared up. It's supposed to be this humanitarian effort. You find out that the 12 monkeys, their whole plot is to release animals out of this zoo, and they have absolutely nothing to do with
which
the virus.
Which was a good twist, yeah, but they didn't do anything with it. Like what I don't... Like, I think part of what makes it poorly written is, like, sure, that's a great twist if you want to be like, oh, no, we've been looking in the wrong spot. Like, you know, these scientists in the future, they have the wrong thing pinpointed as being the source of the problem. Like, that's an interesting twist to be like, oh, 12 monkeys, like, they're just kind of petty troublemakers. Like, they're not really doing anything important. They're not terrorists. But then it doesn't make any sense why the guy who works in the lab is. Like... You have no...
Yeah, they don't
like,
give him
since
the
whole
why.
Point of the movie is supposed to be them figuring out where it came from and establishing, like, the seriousness of that, especially once it becomes about Bruce Willis and Roe, what her name is? Toe? Lowe? I don't remember what
Madison
it is.
Madison
Stowe.
Stowe.
There you go. Since it's supposed to be about Stowe and Bruce Willis eventually getting to the point where they're like, okay, we got to stop these people from releasing this terror attack on the world. It's like suddenly you throw the curveball of like, okay, it's not 12 monkeys, which that's not that group, which is fine. That's an interesting twist. But then it's just kind of arbitrarily this other guy who hasn't been in the movie and is just suddenly deciding to be a terrorist for some, like a domestic terrorist.
That's the problem I have is that first, the 12 monkeys thing is a great move. Like I like that.
That was great. Yeah.
They didn't spend enough time. The other villain, like the Brad Pitt's dad and then the other guy, that part is kind of... That's the part that it feels like they rushed. And this is like a 2-hour and 15-minute movie.
Yeah,
it feels
it's
like
a
they
long
were
time.
Well, because the problem is... I mean, it's obvious that, like, Brad Pitt's dad, Christopher Plummer, another big name in this movie.
I forgot to mention
Christopher Plummer. He's not in it for very much.
No, he's not.
He's kind of a, you know, kind of like...
Lincoln, you know, in this movie.
Like, so it's obvious that he isn't a villain. Like, he's just a businessman who Brad Pitt is, you know, ideologically opposed to or whatever, which is whatever. He's not the villain. He's not obviously planning to, like, do anything bad. He just runs a lab where he tests medicines and stuff. Like, that's... He's not a bad guy.
Yeah, on animals.
But it is weird that, like... You have, like, two scenes that have this guy in it that ends up being the major villain. He's almost not in the film until
the very, very end.
What
it feels like, what it almost feels like is that 12 Monkeys was supposed to be the villain. They were supposed to be the villains. Because everything leading up to finding out they're not makes it seem like they are.
Yeah.
Which could just be good writing. Or it could be writing where it's like, you know what?
That's right.
Too obvious.
It's like, you know, why would we make it this group? And
I think
of course,
all just were smoking a J one night, and they're like, you know, it would be whack,
guys.
We threw him a curveball.
Guys, I got this animal activist.
They'll never see it.
What do you think? It's brilliant. I love it. Let's go with it, and let's show Bruce Willis's ass one more time.
But yeah, like, so it's just so...
I want the credits to come out of his anus. Like,
yeah.
And...
No.
And wide opening.
No.
Just like,
I didn't have to think about Bruce Willis's ass.
It's a full moon this weekend.
Oh, so many full moons. Oh. Yeah, so it's like, that's my biggest problem with it, is like, it makes the whole movie feel poorly written. Because, A... Like you said, too many flashbacks and too much time spent getting to the point of the movie, I think.
What really bugged me is that the flashbacks were all exactly the same.
Yeah.
You had the
traumatizing
path.
No new information. Well, and then, okay, but then that leads me to an interesting, like, thing at the end where it's like, I guess they could have done more with... They should have done a better job with that, because the flashbacks, you have this weird thing of, like, her feeling like she knows him and he's having flashbacks of an airport. They should have done more with that if they wanted to incorporate that, because then you see at the end that the whole thing is just cyclical anyway.
That's the other thing. Do we even need to get into the paradox?
Like, yeah, the paradox of, like, him watching him, like, him as a child watching his adult self
the only reason any of the 12 Monkeys stuff started is because they sent him back in time and he's the one who
implants the idea in Brad Pitt's
head to start the whole 12 Monkeys thing in the psych ward.
Yeah.
That's cyclical.
Yeah, there's so many cyclical things, and it's like that, it, like, time travel movies can be really interesting when you deal with those things of, like, this is what happens when you mess with time, but they don't get into any of that. They just let it be there.
There's a spectrum, because they can either be really, really vague and then you're angry mm-hmm. like, oh, there's so many paradoxes, or they can be on the other end where they're super boring.
Yeah.
Because they're trying
and
to
they
explain
don't really focus.
And I'm not I'm not saying you have to explain them. I'm saying you need to, like, obviously time travel movies, you know, going into anything time travel that you have to deal at some point with the concept of paradoxes, because that's how time travel works. Like, if you're going to go back in time in the same place, you will run into people that have already existed and maybe still exist.
We need to watch Looper, because I think Looper deals with that.
Maybe, but but this isn't Looper. So my point is not that you have to explain everything, but just that you need to handle it in a way that doesn't leave your audience feeling like, what are you doing? Which is kind of how I feel about the time travel in this movie.
It feels like there's no clarity, because obviously you know what's going to happen. He's going to grow up, go back in time, and do the same thing essentially over again. When it shows him as a kid looking at the plane, because you know what's about to be ensued upon, but there's no real reason why he's given this duty to go back in time. It doesn't provide any real closure other than, hey, he got shot, and we're just going to keep throwing the same memory at you that's apparently really traumatizing for no reason.
I don't know if it's a memory being thrown at him. I think it's just his own brain.
No, the audience.
But it is
explanation.
It's also and it's bizarre too, because she feels like she knows him, but
that
wouldn't make sense
would
every
know?
Time. How would she feel like she knows him?
I'm sorry,
the airport thing hadn't.
Like
happened.
I said, we don't need to get into the paradoxes.
Also,
they exist and they aren't explained. So.
No,
yeah,
I just got major pedo vibes when she's looking at him. Like, you just died in front of here, but I got the younger model right in front of me. Okay,
yeah. So they just
that little boy saw years. Spanking that boy. Scrubbing that
light. Yeah, scrub.
Yeah, so like just the way that the time travel is handled is so poor, and it combined with the fact that it feels like they just kind of threw in the twist at the end without having thought it out.
Well, that's how I feel about their whole, even the love story that's kind of thrown at you with the psychiatrist and Bruce Willis. I feel like it's absolutely unnecessary.
And it doesn't really make sense, because they haven't been leading you to believe that there's going to be a romantic element there either.
No, it just seems kind of creepy. They do hint at it, because he's like, I'm sorry, I have to do this, and he's smelling her hair.
No, but I'm saying early on, there's no reason for you to believe that. And
there are very few movies out there that have a male and a female as the main characters, and they spend the whole movie together, and they're not being set up.
I guess that's true.
In fact, the only one that comes to my head is Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, I guess.
And that does a really good job of that. Of having like the main characters be a guy and a girl and have them not be
interested
in
each other.
Absolutely no love attached.
Okay, I guess that's true, but it does still feel a little.
It felt
forced. Even if you kind of know that it's going to happen, it still feels forced.
Well, you know what else felt forced? The ending, the conclusion to this movie, and also Bruce Willis with hair.
Yeah,
that
and
is terrible,
a mustache.
Guys.
Oh my goodness!
I want to know whose idea it was, guys. Forget. Disguise, we're gonna get this wig.
Well, it's kind of goofy again, right?
Mustache.
Yeah, it goes back to the like, you don't feel like you can take it seriously.
Obviously,
you
can't
like,
take the goof out of Gilliam.
No, and
also,
she gets a blonde wig and has the, you know, blood red lipstick, and it just all feels out of place.
Got a real 50s housewife vibe going on.
Yeah, like it is really bizarre. I also felt like it was a little weird that they threw in like his friend, whatever his name, Jose or something.
Well, that was just
showing
way of, tying it back to the present, or tying so that she could find him in the photo and all that stuff. Remember?
Well, are you talking
about...
Well,
no, but he shows up and, like, gives him a gun and is like, you need to shoot her.
Well, okay, that's because they sent him. Why did they send him? I can't remember.
I can't remember why they sent him either.
Because he found out that the 12 monkeys was really just a human rights, like...
animal rights.
Because he calls them.
Rights,
he calls them and leaves the message. And then after
that was the only was the only good bit of like time travel work that they did in that was that was when she calls and the number and leaves the message, and he'd already heard it earlier in the film when he's like, I didn't talk to anybody. That was the only good bit of like time travel paradox looping stuff that they did.
Where
he starts quoting it to her, and she's like, how could you have known that I said that? And he's like, they read it to me like a couple days ago, because last time I went back, like they had already heard the conversation. Like, that was the only good bit of time travel work that they did in this entire movie. That is like where you're like, oh,
and this
that's
is
a
why
good...
time travel will never exist, because it's just too confusing. It's just well, we just wouldn't be able
I
to get
I think
it straight.
It's impossible. Like, I think Meet the Robinsons does a good job. Listen, they do a good job in showing time travel is memory. You can't go back and recreate an event to the exact extent of when
it
occurred.
Creates a new timeline.
You know,
if you
yeah
do.
Yeah every time. And there's like different theories of like time travel. Like if we could, you know,
how
like,
could
theoretically
you
if we could do it? Like how would yeah it work? There's a bunch of different.
It's all just theoretical.
There are like
the,
three major
the past lives in
ideas
your mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if
and
nothing
even,
else,
even your memories aren't the true events
no
of the past because
no,
your memory modifies
are
it.
Yeah. Yeah. If nothing else, I've read and heard from, you know, people that are much smarter than I am and have very lofty scientific degrees that say that you couldn't ever time travel anyway, because the way, like, if you could somehow go back in time, you wouldn't be able to come back to the present because of the Earth's movement. And basically, there's no way to be able to say you could actually land back on the planet. Like, the way the planet moves
just
and stuff.
You throw that into the calculation.
Yeah.
They're saying,
smart
no, but that's what they're saying. These are, no, these are the smart
yeah
people. And they're saying that basically, like, because of how the Earth moves, that, like, even if you could send somebody back, you wouldn't be able to bring them back to the present. So if you went back in time, you'd be stuck there.
Well, if you could get them back in time,
you can't bring them forward, though. Because the thing is, you have no idea to know, like, of knowing. It had something to do with, like, not being able to get them back to being on the planet when they came back to real time. Like, they just end up in space somewhere, essentially.
Well, why would they end up in space when you send
them back? I can't remember. Because that one, it had to do with, like, because you're going into the past, like, you're able to know where the Earth has been or something. So you'd
well
know,
but
like,
that's
how to
kind push of hard.
It's kind of
because then time is just pattern. Time is man-made concept, then. You're just talking about where
physical
Earth is
where
in
Earth is
the rotation.
Look,
not
I didn't do
a
the math
certain event in history.
I didn't do
you
the math.
You could punch in a number and say 05/19/1956. That doesn't mean anything. You punch it into a calculator. How's it supposed
tell that
to know?
To the time machine
yeah,
and,
exactly.
Back to the future.
Exactly.
But I, all
of
I'm,
course.
All I'm saying is that's what I've heard 5th, is like that's the primary thing that they're like, this is why time travel wouldn't work. And I am not the person who did the math or came up with the reasoning. I just know that this is what I've heard from scientists. So I don't get mad
I think
at me.
You represented them very well.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, don't shoot the messenger. I didn't come up with it. I have no idea why. Like, I don't know all the technical aspects.
And there's
of
a
it,
bunch
but
of different theories. And obviously, that's just
I think it's a terrible idea. Because if you've ever, I don't know if you guys have read the I mean, like, it's a common like concept. If you guys have ever read the butterfly effect,
no.
Having,
oh, if you kill a butterfly,
yeah, basically it's like the story about, like, you know, it's in the future, time travel is like this novelty thing that like rich people pay to do, and like what they've done is they've set up like these boardwalks there for that you when you go back in time you go to these specific, there's a cat that would like to come in, you go back to a specific location, you get to walk around like only on this boardwalk, and basically they're like, you cannot touch anything. If you do, like, it will ruin everything. You cannot touch stuff. And this one group goes back, somebody accidentally like steps off the path and onto a butterfly, kills the butterfly. They don't tell anybody, they just step right back on the path. That's the only thing that happens that whole trip. When they come back to the present, like, they're speaking a different language, like, everything is totally changed, like, all of that. And it's basically just the concept of, like, if you went back in time and you change one little tiny thing, it has like a ripple effect across everything. And
I kind of wondered that too, like, if you went back in time and like changed one little thing and came back to the present, like, mm-hmm, maybe these walls would be blue, or like maybe the microphones would be a different brand.
Yeah,
you know,
but
like
the yeah, that's what Endgame debunks completely. And they're like, no, if you go back to the past and you change one thing, you're making an alternate future. So that future that you're presently in never happens anyway. So and then Paul Rudd's character is like, so wait, you're telling me that Back to the Future is bullshit? And he's like, yeah, because there's just a bunch of different alternative
well yeah
times.
that is the way that some people view it. There are other ways to view time travel. It depends on what theory you subscribe to. But regardless, it's just the idea that, like, if you did go back and you changed anything, it would totally alter the future. And it may be in a good way, and it may be in a bad way. Like, you know, people talk about, like, oh, if you go back in time and, like, kill Hitler or something before the, like, World War II. And it's like...
Again, watch Deadpool.
but it's like, would that actually, like, what would that have changed? Like, maybe it would have been fine, and maybe not that much would have changed. Or maybe we'd be living in a totally different world. Maybe the world wouldn't exist.
I'm just going to keep going back and changing things until I come back, and there's a lot more zeros in my bank. Because eventually that's bound to happen for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are an infinite, like, it's like has to do with, like, every decision you make. Like, if you had, you know, it splits. Like, if you had made a decision here instead of here, like, those, that, you know, every decision you make. So eventually,
if I went back in time, if I went back like 10 years and, like, told myself to invest in Snapchat or something, or Instagram, like, and then came back to, like, would I be good? Would I be set?
Yeah,
I think so.
I don't know. It's just, I don't think it'd be happy if I did that. I just think that time travel is a bad idea. Like, if we somehow ever invented it, I don't think anybody should do it.
Yeah,
go to the future.
We're gonna invent it. Yeah. No one's gonna do it.
I'm just saying,
all right, guys. It's like, here. Hey, don't touch the time machine. Well, then you'd have a bunch of people that just keep going back, try and reverse the thing so it benefits them.
But yeah. What about if you use the time machine, go to the future?
So what I'm saying, I was going to say going to the future would be different because you can't do anything that would hurt anything in the future.
I wouldn't want to go to the future. I already hate the present I live
in. Okay, so if we had a time machine, would you go to the past or the future?
I'd want to go to the 80s or the 50s because love the music, just love the times, like going to the 50s, playing baseball, like when it's starting to rise with great heroes of the sport and 80s, just the rock and roll and the times, Reagan's president, high economics. It's like, heck yeah, let's go. I gotta do with 6969, you know, whoever the hell is the hottest artist and actor. I hate these movies. They're all freaking I want to go back to a time Disney didn't own everything and
they owned everything.
Star
in the 50s
Wars
too.
No, it's pre 55, so that's where I would go.
Yes.
What would you do?
Oh, I'd definitely go to the future.
I mean, oh, okay.
Listen,
year though?
There's a lot of old stuff that I would love to go back and experience.
You would still
firsthand.
Have it in the future, like
still have
it would still
the
exist.
Stuff because it would still exist.
It's still
like,
history.
Movies,
I
records,
mean, I know
history,
what I mean.
Stuff
like
that.
Like what you're saying, like I want to go back and experience that all firsthand, mm-hmm. like the past century. You know, that'd
yeah.
be awesome. Or 10 centuries ago. But I wouldn't want to go into the future in my life. I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
I want to see 300, 400, 500 thousand
yeah.
years from now. That's what I want
yeah.
to see. That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see where it goes.
Cause I already know what happened in the past. And as
true.
Much as it'd be cool
see what
to experience
happens
it firsthand, I really want to go see the future.
Watch it just all be a lie and
listen,
none of the stuff that they have in history books.
If I could go back in time, I'd go back to the 90s so I could be in high school in the 90s. That's what
Nate's
mind.
Like, I'm
Buffy
going to the 90s
Vampire
and I'm
Slayer.
Not coming back.
Yeah.
Dude, I'd audition for Buffy the
yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It's like, Nate Clark.
That'd be worth it. If that worked and I ended up being buddies with Joss, hey, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. Life is,
really.
That's the true meaning of life.
Oh, wow.
What about you, Karina?
Oh, boy. I feel torn. I feel like if I knew I couldn't mess anything up, I'd want to go to the past and see things.
What era?
I think I'd want to go, I think, honestly, I'd really like to see some dinosaurs. I'm serious. I'd love to see some dinosaurs. I'd really like to know, like, how close are we on what they looked like? Because, man, it'd be whack if they had, like, polka dots or they were, like, feathered or things like that. Like, that'd be kind of cool to be like, wow, our concept of dinosaurs is totally wrong. I don't know. I think kind of like what you guys were saying of, like, what if the past, like, as we know it, because, you know, we all know history's written by the winners. So it'd be interesting to see if, like, some of those notable historical events that we all know about are accurately portrayed or if they...
I want to go back and, like, see... I want, like, a 360 cam on, like, events like the JFK assassination and 9/11.
Right?
And
things
stuff
like
that
where, like, I'd really like to go see some of that stuff and be like, have we been, either have we been lied to, or just were things not accurately recorded because of what time it was and who was recording. Well, just think of
how much bias we have today, and we're experiencing it all now, and we are having trouble discerning
the truth. I mean, at least we have the benefit of, like, we can film things and record things, so, like, there is some objectivity when it comes to telling things, but definitely, like, you go back a couple hundred years, and it's like, there's no cameras, there's definitely no videos.
Well, even then, I'm trying to think of, there was a movie, where they're looking at video and, you know, they're trying to find, like, a robbery or a murder, and they're looking at it. Oh, it was in Stranger Things, where they're investigating and they're looking at the video of one of the nights where there's a power outage, and he's like, "Do you see that video?" And they're like, "What's wrong with it?" He said, "It was pissing rain that night." And he's like, "Do you see any rain or wind or any sign of that going on?" And he's like, "No, because they edited out or they show different parts of a video." And I think we get a lot of that, you know, nitpicking and showing people what we want to show.
I mean, yeah, there is definitely that element, especially when it comes to, like, mass media, is they're only going to show you what supports, you know, whatever their current agenda is. But definitely, like, we still have somewhat of, like, the ability, just because information sharing is so easy, people that were there, people that saw it, people that were part of it, whatever the incident or the event is, will share it, and eventually you can find all the pieces and put it together yourself to figure out what happened. 100 years ago. No, I mean, even 100 years ago, at least there were still cameras and stuff. I'm talking, like, things that happened, like, pre-camera, pre-radio, pre, like, any ability to permanently record a moment or an incident where it's like, even literally, like, this was just written down by somebody.
I'd even like to go to before things were written down, because think of the Alexandria Library and all the documents that were destroyed.
I'd go back and take pictures of them.
Thousands and thousands of pieces of literature and historical records that are just ashes. Okay,
this brings me to the ultimate question. I don't think I've asked this on the podcast before, but it's something I've thought about a lot. If you could pause time right now and live for another 100 years, and then time restarted. Now, so you get to live another 100 years. You're basically adding 100 years to your life, but you don't age for that. But you still live, like, 100 years of time passes for you, not for everyone else. Everyone else is frozen in time. Would you do it? So you basically get 100 years where time pauses, but you still get to move around.
But the rest of the world doesn't operate. So what would you do? You can't travel. You can't, like...
Yes, you can travel. No, you said time freezes. You can affect things. You can drive cars and stuff like that. Basically, everyone else is frozen in time. You get to move around for 100 years.
I wouldn't want 100 years.
I think I would. I'd like to just knock everything out of the way. You could get so much done without people interrupting you.
But my question would be, what would you do? Because if everybody else is frozen, that means the rest of the world isn't operating. How would you get to Europe?
You learn how to sail. Yeah. 100 years.
You got 100 years to learn.
Okay, but what happens if you, like, die at sea out there or something?
Well, you're dead for the next however many years, and then you...
And then you're alive.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like that's... I wouldn't want that. See, I feel like... Because I would sure be able to operate a car or whatever. Of course, I wouldn't be able to go to a gas station, so I'd have to steal other people's. I wouldn't be able to use the gas pump, would I?
Everything you touch works.
Okay, you live in Oregon where people pump your gas. Everywhere else, you're free to pump your gas.
She pulls up, man.
I can't get gas.
That's not what I meant.
When I say time is frozen, what I mean is basically all the other people are frozen.
Oh, okay.
There's still waves. There's still cycles.
Okay.
Everything else.
Well,
functions.
Then in that case, I still wouldn't want 100 years. I would want maybe.
No.
I'm just saying I wouldn't want 100 years. Like, if I had that option for, like, a little bit of time, like, to go see some things and travel a little bit. But I wouldn't want 100 years. That's way too long. Are you kidding me? I'd be so lonely.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's usually the thing people say. When people say no to that question, that's the reason.
You wouldn't have anybody to talk to.
After the quarantine that everyone's going through, people are like, I don't want to be alone
but
anymore.
But even right now, like, at least in isolation, people can text people. They can make phone calls. So, they can Skype. Like, you wouldn't be able to talk to literally anybody.
There's plus sides. So, yeah, it'd be lonely. But it's... I think it would be a lot less depressing because you're not wasting your life not being around
people. No, I think you would be able to go do a lot of what you wanted to do, and you'd be so preoccupied doing it.
Like, every important film ever made, every important book ever written, you could go watch and read all of those. You could go see everything. You would be the most interesting person in the world when time restarted.
Yeah, just imagine how much experience you could get and how much knowledge you can acquire.
Well, you couldn't get experience. Not in the way that you're thinking of experiencing. You could go see things, but you can't even really experience things because a lot of things that have to be experienced, other people have to be involved in some regard.
Yes,
so you
no.
could like go see things, but you can't really experience
life. As far as nature
There's
goes.
No life experience.
No, but as far as nature goes, like seeing things.
Yeah, I guess.
And, you know,
also, that would be terrifying. Animals. What are you going to do if you can't do
lots of guns.
Hey, gun shops, they can't do anything. They're frozen. I'm packing, okay? Oh, I've got some 308s, some 45.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. That doesn't appeal.
I think I would too.
I wouldn't.
Because, like I was saying, like, it's not like... It's not like it's like you get 100 years, but it's 100 years of your life.
No, I get
You're
that.
You're being gifted 100 years.
You wouldn't be forced to be quarantined by everything.
I know. I get that. I understand that you're not wasting time. It's not like I'm choosing to isolate and not spend time with anybody and only go do my own things. Like,
so Bradley's a yes.
I'm a no.
So you're outvoted. We win.
Yeah,
it's happening.
We get our 100 years.
As soon as we figure out how to pause time.
Where's
the pause button? Pause time.
Now, it would be a riot if you could pick like 400 or 500.
Okay, if I see, that's the thing. If I could pick people to hang out with, that would be different. I would totally do that.
What I'd like to do is like do it through a specific point of history. So you get to live out a 100-year span and you could choose any
that would be
history.
Cool.
But do you get to be... Are you there as like a ghost or are you there as a person? Because if you're there as a person, what if you die?
Valid. Okay, let's say that it's inconsequential.
Like
you can't
like
die.
Last century, you're probably going to get enlisted and die in World War II.
You're immortal. Say none of the things that you experienced in that time can kill you.
It's a Wolverine situation.
Yeah,
he's
kind
born,
of.
Like,
1800s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of thing I would do because it'd be like, you know, you're not putting yourself in any risk. It's just a chance to go experience something.
Or are you just screwing up the timeline?
Definitely screwing up the timeline.
Say it doesn't affect anything in that regard. Either.
If you could go somehow live it in like an alternate reality where you're not going to affect anything in your timeline, but you also aren't going
to
like die there or anything.
Experience everything
like,
that they went through.
Yeah, so basically just a chance to like experience life in whatever era you choose. Well, it would be more than one era. You'd basically be like, what century do I want to live through?
Well, and I was thinking I would do it either Julius Caesar when he's rising, and then that way I get to see the rise of Augustus Caesar, the Roman Empire, and then live during the time of Jesus and then see his ministry throughout. And I thought that would be kind of cool to witness.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. That would be a hard decision to make too. If you were like, okay, you can pick a century to like, you know, kind of those rules of like, you're immortal. It's not going to like alter the timeline by you being there and interacting or anything, but you have to pick a century that you want to live through. Like there's so many interesting centuries. And if you knew you weren't at risk of like catching a disease
or being
murdered in a war or something like.
I think I would want to go back to the 90s so I could be in high school.
Again.
Nate's like, really? I don't want to go back 100 years. I want to go back like 40 years.
Back 15, 20 years.
Yeah. I don't know what I would pick. I would have to think about that for a really long time because there's so many points in history that are really interesting. But I also think there are times in history that I'm like, that would be a really boring time to live. And like, there was nothing interesting going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
honestly, I would probably probably either like the 1800s, somewhere in the 1800s or 1900s.
I think what I would pick, honestly, I would be very tempted to pick anyway, would be like starting to live in like the mid to late 1800s, like starting it there, because of the huge number of like inventions and archaeological discoveries that came during the time. Yeah. Like, it was a huge era for archaeology, and it was a huge era for, like, the Industrial Revolution and all of that going on. Like, I think, and they were kind of happening simultaneously, and, like, the Industrial Revolution started before a lot of the archaeological finds did, but definitely, like, huge overlap of, like, that's when they started finding all the pharaohs in Egypt and, like, all of these other things, like, that were really significant to our understanding of ancient history. I think that'd be a really cool time to live, yeah, to, like, go listen to the lectures by those people that were there. The opportunity just to go on, like, those trips, and you could just go to a place that's, like, having a major archaeological dig and be like, yeah, I'm gonna go hang out in Egypt and watch them do that, or I'm gonna go tour Greece or whatever, and it would be when those places were not as nearly as dangerous to go to either. Like, you'd, yeah, be able to do so much more traveling. It's changed a lot
since then. I mean, I remember there was a point, even in the early 2000s, we were doing cross country with my family, and there was a point where we were near the border of Washington and Canada, and my mom wanted to go to Canada, and at that point you didn't need a visa or a passport or anything to get in. You could just cross country.
Boy, howdy, it's not that way anymore.
No. Now you need driver's license.
Getting to Canada is not that hard.
It's getting back into the United States is the ones that has the tough security. It's not Canada. Canada's like, yeah, come on in, have a good time, eh?
And except on the southern border, we welcome them in freely and give them driver's license. Whole other
it's very different discussion. We're not, yeah, we're not going to get into it.
No.
Or is it?
No. Or is it?
Whole other issue, but
I got a little political last time.
I don't mean to get political in that regard. I am really? Just saying.
You just made a statement about legal immigrants from the Mexico.
That's a pretty political statement.
Have you ever been to the southern border, though?
Okay, but the point is, you said you didn't want to get political, and you made a very controversial political statement. So.
I didn't mean to, but I'm just saying.
Listen, I see what can who's that? I know how it works down there.
Listen, I've seen there. Arrested Development. I've seen how it goes down there.
Yeah. What was that one thing where he says, okay, I'll wrap around the Canadian Border Patrol?
Oh, yeah, Canadian Border, like, Patrol.
Yeah, so it's just one man manning the whole border of Canada? Exactly.
Exactly. He's like, apparently Canada is not the threat that once it used to be. That is such a great video. Yes, if you've never seen it, please go look up the video Canadian Border Patrol. You won't regret it. It's hilarious.
So we're not really talking about the movie anymore.
No, I think that's because
we need to get back to it for ratings.
All right. Yeah. Man, we took a wild detour.
Ladies first.
Oh, boy. I'd give it, like, I would give it a 5.5.
Wow.
Wow. For how much you ripped on that movie, both now and before now.
Did you expect it to be lower than that?
Yeah, I expected like a 3 or something.
Well, okay, but that's what I was saying.
Up until I prompted you to, like, okay, what do you like about this movie? Like, now, in the past, like, 6 days, it's just been about how awful this movie is.
Okay, to be fair, you also the other day said that you wanted to get this podcast done soon because you didn't think you could tolerate sitting through that movie again. You said that.
Yeah, I don't.
You didn't. You said you didn't think you could survive watching it again. You did, because Bradley and I thought it was funny. So yeah, you did say that.
No.
So apparently you've had a change of heart, but you did say that like 2 days ago.
I think are funny that never happened. So.
I'm just saying you said that like 2 days ago. So.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like me.
Yeah, I would give it a 5.5. Like, I feel like I'm being generous.
Oh, I think you are too. But well, I mean, like, from your own personal view.
Yeah.
I think
you're being generous. I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt of that he was trying, and he just was coming from a background of not knowing how to make a series.
Wow. Wow. Terry, you get the participation award for movies.
Thank you for trying.
I would say, though, like I said, the acting itself is not bad. The performances are good. I just think the story is poorly written. It has some weird plot holes and just kind of there's some leaps in there that you don't really understand how they got there, and they just decide that they're going to do something with the plot line, and you're like, okay, we're doing this now. And I think that it has too much of that for it to be like a good movie. It's not a movie I would probably recommend to anybody to watch unless you're really into like time travel or really
you're recommending it to.
Or if I hate them. Yeah, unless you're really into Bruce Willis, or you're really into time travel movies, or you're really into
Bruce
Terry
Willis
Gilliam
doing time travel
or Madeline Stone.
Or Madeline Stone. Yeah. If you're not into those things, I don't think most people would really enjoy that movie that much. It doesn't have very good action. It's not really funny, and the story is not super well written. So there's not a lot of redeeming qualities yeah. there. So I'd give it a 5.5 because it wasn't atrocious, but it was definitely lacking in some pretty important areas. So 5.5.
I give it a 3 for each moon that you see Bruce Willis's head and his left and right butt cheek.
What about his dong?
Except for
his dong, you don't see his dong.
Oh, but you do.
But oh, do you? Were you looking for it?
A little bit. I'll look
for a little bit. When did you see that?
No, he actually does. I think it's during the war scene.
I see a little bit.
He's naked in that.
I don't remember seeing that.
Because after the guy on the stretcher goes by, his friend, he's like sitting and he turns towards the camera to go up and follow him. And you get a little peep. It's like a half a frame, but it's there.
I don't remember. Okay, apparently Nate was looking. You're going to have to look for it. Yeah. I think Nate was looking for it because I do not remember seeing it.
I just wanted to go on record that I am not really in any way attracted to Bruce Willis.
No.
Nor was he even a little bit looking for it.
Brad Pitt is a different matter.
Yeah.
We all can all agree.
I'm not attracted to Brad Pitt.
No.
No, he does do a good job playing a schizophrenic.
We didn't talk about him very much. But
we probably should talk about it.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah, I think Brad Pitt would be one of the redeeming qualities in his performance.
So do you like his performance? Jack Nicholson's more as...
Oh, I would love Jack Nicholson's more, just because this isn't the type of movie I would necessarily expect Brad Pitt to do in an acting performance. I think he does a good job, but I think Jack Nicholson does way better because that's just his personality as a crazy man, you know.
Well, they play them very different. They play very different.
They play two totally different
characters. He seems like the kid who had ADHD, Brad Pitt, ADHD, schizophrenia, or bipolar disorder, you know.
Yeah, like they play very different kinds of like mentally.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson plays more sinister. Kind of more planned out.
Yeah, and
but they're both in a state of denial.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think most crazy people.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the gist.
I'm not crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'm not an addict.
Everyone else
well,
is
how
crazy.
Well, how about right Nate gives us his rating and then we can talk about Brad Pitt's performance real fast.
I would give it like a 6. Because, there are bad things about it. I think they found their filming and their editing in a dumpster. a dumpster from the 90s, because it's pretty bad.
Without Buffy.
A dumpster, yeah, a trash can outside of high school in the 90s. It's atrocious. It really is, and that's disappointing, because that's just how it is. And I think that the writing is a little bit rough, but not too bad. I think the plot is really good. I think it's a good sci-fi... It's a fun time travel movie. I think it has a good sci-fi plot. I like the 12 Monkeys twist. Like I said, the writing's a little rough. I wish they could have done a better job with the guy that actually ends up being the villain. Really good acting.
Like, do we even know that dude's name?
Christopher Plummer.
No. He's not
the
villain.
Oh, the other guy with the...
The guy who's actually the villain. Do we even know his name? Is he ever named?
He's in Disturbia with Shia LaBeouf.
Okay, we're not talking about the actor.
The character's name.
The character, that's what I mean. Yeah,
the actors. Yeah.
It's not Shia LaBeouf.
That's the character's name.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't even think they give us the guy's name in the film, much less a motive for
domestic
terrorism. No, he doesn't. He has
the first time you see him is when he's in the lab with...
And basically he just like answers a question
actually,
about security.
You see him when she, the...
Oh yeah, right.
The woman psychiatrist is giving her lecture about
still,
the plague.
Okay.
Introduce himself.
Okay, at that point he may introduce himself, so maybe he does give a name, but you don't realize he's going to be a character.
What they should have done, it's obvious what they should have done. They should have cut that guy out. They should have had Christopher Fulmer be the guy who comes up at the end of the convention and talks to her. And have him be the guy that comes back and ends up being the guy that gets shot or that gets away at the end or whatever.
Yeah.
It should have been him, not the middleman. Like,
well, he's not even middleman. He's like a lab assistant. And
he ends up being like the main villain. Or not the main villain, but he ends up like doing the main... He's in the climactic
scene. Yeah, he's responsible for the play.
Yeah, like it's so weird because he has like 2 lines of dialogue in the entire thing. We're not sure if he has a name or not. If he does, none of us remember it. And... You in the first scene that you meet him, you don't even realize he's going to be an important character until the very, like, even in the scene with the lab, you don't realize he's going to be the dude that does it. You still think they're setting it up for the 12 monkeys, which is good, and from a story writing perspective, in that you don't suspect him,
but the payoff is
bad because then they don't do anything with it. Yeah. And they're like, oh, by the way, it was him.
Yeah.
What? Okay. Especially, I did think it was interesting, going back to the flashbacks thing. In one of his flashbacks, you do see, because then you note, I noticed it in the way that they filmed the part at the airport where the lab assistant dude shows up. In one of the flashbacks when Bruce Willis is, like, reliving his death or whatever, he sees the guy with the ponytail as being Brad Pitt. Yeah. And then when the guy shows up at the airport, they do a good job of not showing you his face for a while. They just show you the hair, the bag,
right,
all of that stuff. So you still think it's Brad Pitt. It's Brad Pitt.
Now, and that's then, because he thinks it's Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying it is interesting. It's like they put some of the pieces in there, but they just didn't do a good job making you understand who this guy is or why he's
the
terrorist.
I think that this movie has like a really, really good explanation. Like everything fits together perfectly, and I want to go read that article.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure somebody else...
Sure, the director. Yeah, the director probably...
Maybe. I mean, maybe it's a movie that does need to be watched a second time to grasp some of that.
Yeah, but then you're bordering on Cruel and Unusual Punishment.
That is
so,
See,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
But it's still a 6 out of 10 because I yeah. enjoyed it. Even if sometimes at its own expense, I enjoyed it.
So did we want to mention... I mean, we kind of briefly touched on Brad Pitt a little bit in his acting. Did you? But you were saying we didn't really talk about it much. So I don't know if you have more you wanted to say about that.
It briefly shows Brad Pitt's butt.
Yes, I know.
I thought you would like that. When he pulls his pants down when he's going on his rant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nate's like, Brad Pitt.
He's running around, you know.
That's a funny scene, actually.
With his cheeks out. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually really liked his character.
His butt.
Because he was kind of... Like, he wasn't...
I especially liked his character afterwards, like, after he gets out of the psych ward when he goes to 97 or 98.
And he's, like, being
okay,
super pretentious.
How about all the times he flips everybody off?
I like that's
just
his calling card, is that he flips
people
off.
Constantly flipping people off in this movie.
Yeah. But, no, I enjoyed his character because he kind of has this weird combination of, like, he's a little bit funny, but he also kind of acts like a child. He also, though, seems like he's more intelligent than you think he'd be, though. Like, because he is schizophrenic or something.
Yeah.
Like, and he's a very, he just that kind of weird mix of, like, you're not quite sure how lucid he is.
But he could be dangerous.
That's the thing. It's like, you're like, he could be super dangerous, or he could just be this harmless, like, wacko.
I just remember when he's talking to the group of the 12 monkeys, and he's like, trust me, every time they're doing an examination, they were thorough. And he grabs his balls after.
That's a good job. It's a little bit... The beginning of his character, I thought, was a little over the top, is what it felt
yeah.
like. But I think throughout the course of the movie, I think it works.
It works.
I think it's a good...
When you're playing... What I've heard from a lot of actors who have played psychotic characters, everyone who is critiquing it says, oh, they seemed a little over the top. But each time the director defends and says, well, they have to be over the top. I mean, you think of Jack Nicholson. You think of... I'm forgetting his name. Plays Joker in Batman with Christian
Heath
Bale. Heath Ledger. They were saying his performance is absolutely over the top and psychotic, but because it's over the top, that's why it's so good in the end.
Also, like, you do have to make it a little over the top, I think, in a film anyway, because they have to stand out. I mean, unless it's supposed to be some kind of, like, horror film where you don't realize that somebody's crazy the whole time, and that's like the main plot twist, is that, oh, this person's psycho. You need people to realize that this person is not normal, and so sometimes you have to do that by, like, making them a more dramatic version of something that maybe in real life isn't usually that dramatic. Like, but of course, also, I've never been to a psych ward. Maybe that's what these people are really like. It might seem over the top, but a lot of times that's because the people that are like this are either A, homeless, and you're probably not interacting with them much, or B, they are in a psych ward somewhere, and you don't know what they're like.
Some people that are homeless and schizophrenic, they're yelling and screaming at poles in the street.
So, I don't know if it is that over the top.
When I say over the top, maybe what I'm really meaning is, like, cliche.
It could be a little cliche. It could be.
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
But he still does a good job being cliche Chris.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. But you do, I think definitely by the point, like, you know, once you get a little ways into the film, you do feel like he's genuinely got some screws loose. Like, and it doesn't feel as forced, I guess. His performance doesn't. Like, I agree, early on, it kind of felt a little like, oh, okay, this is how he's playing a crazy character.
Well, maybe that's the point, is that then you can see the improvement. Like, he's normalized a little bit. He's not as, like,
yeah,
bouncing off the walls insane as he is a few years before that.
But he's still, like, erratic and very eccentric and and you can see that even if he's not literally bouncing all over the place, his mind is bouncing all over the place, like the way that he talks, and he did a good job with that. Like, you feel like he's really just all over the place and like cannot, you know, connect to consecutive thoughts. So yeah, you definitely,
I was thinking
he was a more interesting character than
after he's released and, you know, he's in society, you know, he kind of calms down, but obviously his mind is bouncing everywhere else. Like, I think when people get cooped up in insane asylums and have that treatment, because there's obviously been a lot of negative publicity behind mental institutions and the treatment of their patients and what goes on in there. Honestly think if you have someone who does have a mental handicap and you have them in society, or at least participating in something that is more normalized than being cooped up in a mental institution with other people who are crazy and getting treated poorly, you'll probably see them have better mental health in the long run.
We've already had this discussion, but that's what you see in Cuckoo's Nest, where he takes them all out on the boat.
Yeah,
and they behave more normally and are more functional. So yeah, that's definitely part of it.
So are mental institutions helping or making their condition worse?
I mean, yeah, that's the question.
But you can't have them all running around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
who calls the shots?
Quarantine them. We're all crazy.
Wow, everybody's a little bit crazy.
Anyway, so yeah, it's a movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
wasn't our favorite.
I wouldn't say it's forgettable. I don't think it's quite there.
I don't think I'll ever forget it.
If not for a good reason, for a bad one.
Yeah. You know,
but
yeah. I always laugh at Bruce Willis's wig and mustache.
Oh, my goodness.
But definitely the best part. We didn't really... We mentioned it a lot. We never talked about it.
Yeah.
Definitely the highlight of
that
the film.
That was.
Long, straight hair.
It comes out of nowhere. And
it really does, where she gets him that wig. Like,
if you want to not recognize Bruce Willis, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
It is excellent. Him, so. Yeah. Yeah, he definitely does not look like himself, but he also doesn't look like somebody you could take seriously in that movie.
I don't think any of us would recommend this movie.
No, would not recommend it.
Yeah. Unless you have a very specific and very odd and really just terrible set of tastes, then no, we wouldn't recommend this film for you. Unless you're really into, like, torturing yourself. And in that case, go for it.
Some people are.
I know.
That's their kink.
Gotta be, what is that, masochistic?
Self-flagellant. All
right,
well.
I think it's masochistic.
That'd be
masochistic. Masochistic.
But it's also self-flagellants.
Yeah.
Not
flagellants. Anyway.
Thanks, dude.
You're welcome.
Thanks for
sorry.
End on a high note there.
That's to our uneducated listeners out there.
So, to all of our listeners, uneducated or not, email us at limitedtoeverything@gmail.com.
We didn't introduce ourselves.
Anything at all. Or follow us at L2E Podcast on Instagram. I'm Nate.
I'm Karina.
I'm Bradley.
And you have been listening to Limited to Everything.
Sixty-nine. 69. 69. 69. 69. 69. 69. 69. 69. 69.